probably one of the latest times we've ever planted corn, and I planted for 42 straight hours.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. Podcast, where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. So today we're chatting with Jake Wilrett, sixth generation of farmers on Wilrett Natural Farms, a certified organic farm out in Malta, Illinois, which for everyone in Chicago is near Northern Illinois University. They produce food-grade grains, which means they grow grains that get eaten by American people when they're shopping for organic foods. I'm so excited to chat with Jake today about the first 100 days of a crop's life cycle and all things farming, because Lord knows I'm a city slicker and I don't know anything. So, hey, Jake, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
You know, just dandy, excited to learn about life not in the city, essentially. So if you could give us a little bit of background as to what you all produce out at Wilrett Natural Farms, and what all goes into being a certified organic farm, just for some background.
Great. Well, also, thank you for having me. I'm pretty pumped to be on here and talk about what we do, because obviously one of my favorite things to do is talk about farming. So a little background. Like you said, I am the sixth generation family farmer in Malta, Illinois. My ancestors migrated from Germany, which they farmed over there, and I don't even know how many generations they farmed over there. So a long line of farmers run in our family. So that's something I'm very, very proud of, and mostly just because I have the opportunity to take on the legacy and continue moving forward with our operation. On our farm, I am a partner with my dad, Randy. We have been farming together for, I think, this would be my seventh year. I graduated college from Iowa State University in 2014 and then came right back home to farming. The reason I talked about the opportunity, there's a lot of kids that grew up on farms that don't have the opportunity to go back. And the reason for that is the financial model that a lot of farms have only allow, you know, kind of one business owner. And if the farm isn't economically sustainable enough to bring in another person to the operation, or, you know, the next generation, a lot of kids will have to go take jobs until dad's ready to retire. And then they'll come into the operation later in life. So I'm really, really happy that I got the opportunity just to come straight back and work with my dad. So, yeah, but that's just the operation side. But as far as what we grow, like you said, we're a certified organic grain farm. So that means all of the acres that we farm are either certified organic or in the transitional process of becoming organic. And we grow three grains. We grow corn, soybeans, and oats. Yeah, we can talk a little bit
that
more about
that. Sounds very Illinois, honestly. Soybeans, corn. Yeah.
Yes, it's very typical. But what's interesting enough is, you know, we do grow the same grains, but we do it in such a different way than all of, we call them conventional farmers, any farmers that are growing genetically modified grain. Everything that we grow in the organic sector is has no GMOs in it, and does not use any synthetic fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, insect, anything with a side at the end, we are prohibited from using. Which we're pretty good with. We know we like the fact that we don't do that. So
yeah, well, I think most people also like that, because organic, if anything, has become more. I mean, it's definitely become more of a thing in my lifetime. That's for sure. Like, I was definitely eating Lunchables, you know, and I don't think kids eat Lunchables anymore. So if anything, like, healthier, more clean food is definitely a thing that people are into.
Absolutely. A lot of our market, I believe, as far as the food market goes, is geared towards people who are living closer to the cities. And not to say that people in the rural settings are less educated, because that's not always the case. But as far as what people can afford, because obviously it's all part of the budget, right? Like, if you have a bigger budget, maybe you will choose to eat more organic, and you are maybe a little bit more educated on what is healthy and what's not healthy.
Well, and then sometimes too, it's almost like what's even available to purchase, right? Because if there's only a smaller market of people that want to buy it out somewhere where there's like one grocery store for like five counties, I don't know how the farms work, clearly you can tell, but like in the city, there's like five different grocery stores within 10 blocks.
Right. And there's a Whole Foods everywhere.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, before I ask you about like all the technical things with farming and your guys' farm and how all that stuff works, how did you end up like going back to the family business? Because you mentioned that this is, you know, you mentioned it's an opportunity that you get to go and do this. But was this something that you wanted to do? Like, yes, it's a great that you have the opportunity, but is this an opportunity you wanted to take?
So everybody's, as far as like farmers go, everybody has a different story. A lot of the case, most people just, you know, grew up doing it and just always knew that's what they wanted to do. And that wasn't really the case for me. I mean, I grew up doing it. You know, I was driving tractors at 8 years old, and I've been pretty much working on the farm since my dad would let me. And if I wasn't working, I would just be riding with my dad. I've always been working. I love to work. That's just a passion of mine. So as far as going back to the farm, I didn't have a huge ambition of doing that when I was in college when I was in high school, because everybody, you know, if you grow up doing something, you kind of get turned away from it or get turned off by it. You want to kind of see what else is out there. So when I was in high school, I kind of had goals to go work for a business or go away from the farm for a while, just to kind of learn from somebody different and just to work for somebody else. But when I was a freshman in college, my dad had a tumor in his wrist, and he was pretty much had a major surgery and wasn't physically able to do a lot of the things. And I just had an obligation to come back. And that's when I realized, you know, instead of just coming back just to work and, I kind of changed my mindset of saying, you know what, I'm going to give this 100% and just fully invest myself and just see if this is really for me. And once I changed that mindset coming back, you know, during the summer and engaging myself more on an intellectual level and rather just doing a lot of grunt work, I just absolutely fell in love with it. And especially a lot of the tools I learned in college. You know, I feel like there's a lot of people that feel like they aren't using a lot of the tools they learned in college, but
me,
I feel like
that's me.
Exactly.
I was a poli sci major. I don't do any of that stuff.
Exactly. I mean, I feel like that's like majority of the population, but I actually do. And I remember being in college, I was like, this is so dumb. Like, I should just go back to the farm and work. Like, I'll be just fine. And now on a day-to-day basis, like the longer I've been away from college, the more I realize, thank God I went to college, because not for the sole, I mean, there's a lot of things I learned that I can apply to the farm, but just always like having the desire to surround myself with people who are smarter than me and that I can learn from, and just opening my eyes to just constantly try and learn from other people's experiences. And it's amazing when you just open up your eyes, the wealth of knowledge that is around you that you can, you know, keep absorbing. That's like my great uncle, who's like one of my biggest idols. He's 89, and he told me the key to success in life is to never stop learning and never feel like you're smart enough to, you know, you're never done learning. And as long as you maintain that mentality, he said, you will be so successful. So that's what I've done, and that's what keeps me going. So that's a long answer for that, but
nah, it's cool. Yeah. I like it. And I mean, to give some context to people, Jake is not like 45 years old on a farm. He's like 27. So that's why I think it's really interesting to ask, because I personally don't know anyone that's like a young farmer person, which is why it makes it really cool and very relatable and fun to talk to him, because you went to college, you know how all the things work. Like, you obviously live close to Chicago, you know how that all functions, you know? So I'm sure that the appeal of going to a big city and stuff after school was really big, but that's why I think it's really fun and awesome to learn about, you know, why you went back and all the different things that you do there. You're taking over the family farm, right? So What's the mentality behind this is likely where you're going to be for forever?
Yeah.
What is that like?
Oh, man, that's a really, really good question. So just a random statistic to give you, the average age of a farmer is 59, and it keeps going up 1 year every year, or one age year every year. So next year it'll be 60. So yes, I am young. There's not very many young people coming back to the operation for the same reason that I explained earlier. A lot of people just don't have the opportunity to. I do feel a little outside my boundaries a lot of times. I've gotten over that the older I've gotten, but just being surrounded with a lot of baby boomers on a day-to-day basis sometimes can get frustrating. Just because for a lot of reasons, but farming has taken off in the technological sector, and that's something that I bring back to the table, but we can talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, going back to your hometown, oh my gosh,
I don't want to go back to Glenview. Like, no offense to all the Glenview folk out there, but like, I'm okay with being down in Chicago right now.
Right, that's something like I always had fantasized about, like when I was in high school and college, of like going off and living these like fun experiences, living in the city, things like that. Because that's what I'm the youngest of six kids. I'm the only one that came back, and everybody's off doing like amazing things, which it's great to go visit all my siblings. But like, it's also there is a little bit of jealousy like deep within me, just because a lot of like my good friends from high school, like what did they do? They went off and they're going and living those experiences as well. So it is hard. It's challenging to come back to your hometown and try and like be part of a successful business while also like socially, like it can be challenging because, you know, a lot of the people that are still here, I don't really spend much time with or communicate with. So, but I do have friends that aren't too far away. And I've also made new friends within the farming community and just continued to network. And it's funny, like I've met a group of organic farmers who are all like my age that farm down in like central Illinois, which like I don't know anybody doing what we're doing that's my age or like in the millennial generation. And I got to talking to them, like we're actually friends now. We met probably like a month or two ago, and we all have a group chat and we talk quite a bit. But it's funny to share the experiences like outside of farming of just like everyday life, and they're going through all the exact same struggles like me and my wife do. So yeah, it's funny, but it's challenging. It's different, but you just have to always try and find the good in everything. Because if you're just like bummed out about the negative sides of that, you probably aren't going to last long. So we just try to take advantage of all the good things that, you know, the community has to offer. Being involved in the community is something that's actually really like helped, even though like we are young, but like doing community activities, helping other people, that's made it a lot more fulfilling. And I'm very, very proud to live here now. It's a transition.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure it's to a point very comforting as well to know like, okay, so this is what this is going to look like. And you don't even have to worry about that for a while. How about we jump into what it actually looks like to get a crop started. And the reason why I'm using these general terms is because I have literally no idea what I'm saying when I say to get a crop started. So how about you walk us through what it takes to prepare for a life cycle? I don't even know, prepare for a harvest. Like, what are the words? Please teach me things.
You got it. There's a lot. We'll start with the winter, because the winter right now is kind of downtime for us. And by downtime, that means we're working in the office a lot more. There's a lot of planning that goes into place, planning of all the operations that happen from start to finish, what seeds we're going to choose for which varieties of seed we're going to choose for each crop, where we're going to place them on each farm, and then where are we going to market it to. Like the two most important things are what crop are we going to grow, meaning seeds and all the details with that. And then where are we going to sell that?
Does that change year to year?
Absolutely. Yep. And then nailing down all the fine details in between of how are we going to do this in an efficient and timely manner. So it all starts with sourcing the seed. Once you choose which fields are going to get planted to what, it's sourcing the seed, figuring out what seed you're going to place where for specific reasons, whether it's biological reasons or I don't know. It's hard to explain without getting into too much detail of why we place which seeds where. But we source the seed. Right after that, we'll get the seed delivered. Typically a month or two before we plant it. Once the ground warms up, we are going to start working the ground, tilling the ground, and loosening up the soil, allowing that soil to get oxygen in there, allow it to breathe, allow it to dry out enough. Because we live in everywhere in the United States is different as far as agriculture goes. But where we live, we get a lot of rain. So, and we have some wet, dense soil. So that soil needs to be able to breathe. It needs to be able to dry out. Because if it's too wet when we're out there doing our normal day-to-day operations, we're going to damage the soil structure. So we try to take care of the soil as best as possible. After we get done, so we'll work it in the spring. Typically after we work it a few times, we'll plant the seeds into the ground in rows. Once the seeds get rain, there's nutrients in the soil that allow the seed to germinate. The plants come up. Throughout the season, they'll continue to grow and mature. And then by fall, our grains are ready to get harvested. We harvest them, we store them in a bin, and then we ship them out throughout the winter and throughout the following year. And that's pretty much like the most general basic cycle I can explain this.
I like it. It's very ingestible, except for that I want you to explain the scale of which you're doing things, because sure. I follow you guys on Instagram. It's not just like a hand mill and you're just, you know, hand putting seeds into the ground. Like, that's not how that works. Right.
Absolutely.
Like, there's so much more. Yeah.
Okay. So we are on a 3-year rotation of corn, soybeans, and oats. So we have X amount of acres that we farm, and then each chunk of those acres are divided by 3. So we have farms placed all over the counties. We farm in 2 counties, DeKalb County and Ogle County. And each of those thirds get planted to either oats, corn, and soybeans. And then allows the reason we put it on a 3-year rotation is it's required by the USDA to be certified organic to have your crop on a specific rotation. And that they implement that just for the sole fact is growing the same crop over and over is unhealthy for the soil, and it allows pests and weeds to get really comfortable within their environment. So by rotating crops, biologically allows any pests or any weeds or any infestation, any diseases, anything to never get too comfortable, because different crops and different things are getting planted in those fields every year. And the other important reason for us is it also breaks up the workload, because if we grew like all the same crop, you know, we would be planting it all at the same time and harvesting it all at the same time as well. And that creates like a lot of stress load on trying to get things done in a timely manner, weather permitting, right? So that's why we break things up into thirds. So to move forward with that, when we are working the ground, we're using large equipment to till the soil. We have a lot of different machines that we use to till the soil, but in the springtime we're using 2 specific machines, and the basic way I can explain it is we want to get that soil fluffy. We want to work it probably 3 inches deep, kind of like when you're working a garden, you know, you want the soil to get turned, you want it to fluff, you want it to aerate. That way it'll dry out enough for when we go in with a planter, if you're putting seeds into a wet, muddy condition, it's just not doable. The seeds won't germinate. You're damaging the structure of the soil. You're going to have compaction issues. And by compaction, I mean just like when you step into a pile of, step into a muddy place, like what happens to your foot? It sinks in and then it turns into, that's not good for the soil structure, because it just forces everything to move around, and then there's no aeration, there's no way for oxygen to get in where your footprint is, and that's the quote-unquote carbon footprint that people talk about.
where did you learn all of these things? I don't know. Like, I mean, like I said, I was a political science major, and I'm not saying that you can't learn it in school, but like Notre Dame didn't have like farming 101. And I know that a lot of state schools, like the University of Illinois and all that, they have really good agriculture schools. But is this what they teach you in agriculture schools? Like, I have no idea. So
I went to school for ag business. And that was everything I learned in college was just everything business, with like in every example, more or less, that we would like you practice with the business would be ag related and like how it related to the ag field. So to answer your question, no, I learned this from farming at a young age. This is just knowledge that is handed down from generation to generation. So I've kind of just known things like this since I was little.
So then do you think it's hard for people that want to get into the farming world if they weren't already in it? But would you say that that's kind of like that's part of what makes it difficult to do so?
Anything's possible. I mean, you put your mind to anything, you can do anything. It's all about mentors. It's all about people that you can learn from, you know, because I had obviously the opportunity to learn from my dad about all of this. But as long as you find the right people, and if you are interested in any field, you know, you have to get out there and start at the bottom and work your way up. And that's how you learn how anything goes. So that's pretty much how it's gone on our operation. I'm just kind of talking like one specific thing. There's a lot that goes into this. Well, let's just talk about the difference between like organic and conventional real quick. Like what we do, we don't have, so I'll explain the basic like conventional model. And this is what so many farmers across like the Corn Belt do. Pretty much early spring, they will spray their ground with herbicide to not allow any weeds to germinate and flush and come up. More or less, the spray that just goes out and kills anything that's living within the soil. And then they will go out and work it. So they'll spray that probably sometime in April. And then shortly after that, they'll work the soil and then they will plant it. There's a lot of different sources of fertilizer that conventional farmers use, but the three main ingredients that farmers need to replenish in the soil is nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. That's like what plants, these production plants need to grow. And you can either add it in when you plant, you can add it in the fall before, you can add it in the early spring. Everybody kind of has a different system. But just for the sake of argument, we'll just say that everything's on the planter. There's tanks with liquid fertilizer on the planter, and then it gets injected into the row when the seed is going into the ground. So they'll spray it, they'll work the ground, they'll till the ground, and then they'll go in and plant, we'll just say corn, and put their fertilizer down with the corn. Then the corn will germinate, it'll come up, and there will be no weeds with that corn. The biggest thing when it comes to weed pressure and why, you know, farmers are so concerned about weeds is it's all about competition. So if weeds are germinating and growing at the same speed as any crop, it can literally choke out the crop. Like, it'll outcompete it.
I thought you were going to say like competition between the farmers. I was like, I had no idea this was a thing.
No, competition, like the biological competition. So that's why you don't want any weeds. To be growing out in the field while your crop is trying. The earlier stages of plant growth, it's like the most vulnerable, right? So like once the crop comes up, there's no weeds to outcompete the crop. It'll continue to grow, but early spring is when most weeds like to germinate. So farmers will maybe go out there, say they plant in April, they might go back out in May or June, maybe sometimes in July, and spray again to kill any of the weeds that are coming up. For that second, you know, flush of germination, if it outlasts a band of whatever chemical that they spray, the crop will come up, continue to grow, and then they don't really have to do anything until it's time to harvest. So some guys will put down a second or third application of nitrogen just to give it that extra boost to fully optimize the yield, because the nitrogen is the most important source as far as growing corn to allow it to produce like the highest amount of yield possible. But yeah, after that, they don't really have to do much. They'll harvest it in October, November, and dry and store the grain and start it all over again the next year. But as far as organic goes, it's a lot different because we can't use any of those fun chemicals that they get to use. I shouldn't say fun. I don't like them. What we do, those flushes of weeds will come up and we will kill them mechanically using like tillage tools. Just kind of like the same thing you would do in a garden. Like if a weed came up or like a weed comes up in your landscape, what do? You pull it, right? So we're using tools like machines to do that for us. So we're driving tractors and pulling machines to kill these weeds. And we'll typically do that like multiple times before we even plant it. And then after we plant it, then we go out a couple days after that and use more tillage tools to kill more weeds that are still germinating. Because like I said, springtime, that's when the weeds love to take off. Because that's, you know, weed seed will live in the within the soil like forever. So we're just trying to, the best that we can do to eliminate the weed pressure to allow our organic crops to grow. So once they get growing, we'll continue to battle the weeds in the early spring. We'll use 4 to 5 different tillage tools throughout the first 40 days is like the most important for when the seed goes in the ground to when the row closes up. And to explain the row closing up, we plant on, like in our rows, say we're planting soybeans or corn, we plant on 30-inch rows. And the reason we do that is it allows us to use equipment to get into the field because our tires are skinny enough to sneak through between the rows, but also allows them to get enough sunlight to grow and or to photosynthesize and continue to grow. So when we plant in rows, like I said, we can drive in between there, but as the crop continues to grow, bigger and bigger, the row will begin to close up, like the leaves will canopy over. And now in between the rows, there's no sunlight allowed to get in there. We call it shading the row. And now no weeds can really germinate if it's not getting any sun because it can't photosynthesize, right? So that's like the goal. Like the biggest battle that we face is when we plant, and then the battle of controlling the weeds until those rows canopy. And once they canopy, we are pretty much done using tillage tools out there. And that's when we will hire laborers to go out and pull any weeds that we couldn't get mechanically.
So then what would you say are some of the different factors? Like you mentioned the row size with the mechanical size of your tracks and everything like that. So what are some of the different factors that you need to take into consideration each year?
So we have so many different markets, right? So like we grow food grade grains, which typically we sell to end users that process it, or we kind of call them middlemen, but it's like processors that mill the grain or for example, we'll talk or roll the grain. So we'll talk about oats. Like the oat buyers we sell to, they'll roll the oats or process the oats to however, say General Mills or Quaker or whoever is buying these organic oats, however they want them milled, if they want them steel cut, if they want them just rolled, if they want them kind of chopped up like quick oats, like they'll handle all the processing and then they'll ship it to whoever. So we don't deal with that end. We just grow the raw product and then ship it out. So when we choose varieties, we're conscientious and careful about what our buyers want, right? Because we're not going to grow something that doesn't meet the specs that their buyers need. So that's where crop placement is very important, because we have to choose the right seeds with the right genetics to be used for whatever the end user wants.
Gotcha. And how do you know is there like a catalog of seeds? Or how do you know what to purchase?
So
specifically,
typically the buyers will send us a recommended list. Mm-hmm. And then so many different producers or seed companies will do what's called a test plot. And in a test plot, they'll grow multiple varieties in a small space of land. It's
small compared to your farm.
Correct. Yes. A smaller section of land, they will do a ton of different test plots and they will see which varieties, you know, perform the best. And there's a lot of different characteristics that go into what buyers want. But once they harvest the grains, they can then like put together an analytical like spreadsheet of how each variety performed. And then that'll be like public information for the farmers to allow them to analyze, you know, that plot data and then help us choose like, oh, okay, this variety performed really well here, like in Eastern Illinois, and this variety did really well in like Southern Wisconsin. So I'm willing to bet it's going to perform really well where we're at. So we're going to plant some of this variety. If we're introducing a new variety, but a lot of the time we'll be growing the same varieties. If they keep performing well, we'll say, okay, we're going to grow that variety again because we were happy with the results the year before, until it shows any signs of having a failure or there's a new and improved product out there or seed that, a seed salesman will be like, hey, I think this is going to work better for your operation compared to what you were doing. These are the side-by-side trials with the one that you're currently doing with the new one. Because there's obviously always new genetics, you know, plant breeders are always trying to improve genetics. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's cool. That's kind of the seed side. The whole seed side is like a whole separate animal compared to like everyday operations. Because right. Once we pick the seed and once we plant it, like it's over, right? Until we harvest it and then we analyze it the next winter.
Well, so then you said earlier that the most vulnerable time of a crop is really in that, like planting, the weeds, not having the weeds be a thing.
The early cycle, yeah. The early stages. Yeah, so like,
what about it makes that the most vulnerable? Is it because it's like still a little baby seed or
exactly.
It's
just the same thing of like a baby infant or a baby animal is the most vulnerable at a younger age until it, once it gets older, it can handle any sort of like hardship later on. And that's the same thing when it comes to plants. Like a younger plant is not going to survive a nasty storm or a bad wet spell or a cold spell. Like the conditions in the environment for that, you know, younger immature plant needs to be good. Otherwise, it can fail or it can die. Right. So.
What are the different things that you think about then during that time? Like, do you try to, I know you guys can't predict the weather, but is that something you take into consideration? And like, has anything happened that made the outcome not go the way you wanted? Or is it pretty,
absolutely.
I don't know how this works. Yeah.
I mean, like it's crazy. Like explaining to someone who doesn't really know a ton about farming, imagine if your entire livelihood was dependent on the weather.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, yeah. Well, that's the weather person, but they never get fired. So I don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. Yeah. Exactly. Being a meteorologist would be a lot easier than being a farmer.
Right, yeah.
You could be wrong. But yeah, it's stressful. And it's, you can't really plan for a lot of what goes into it. You do the best you can to plan everything. Mm-hmm. But as far as like an everyday operations go, timing is everything when it comes to organic farming, and everything is weather permitting. So, you know, it like last year was probably the most challenging year our farm has ever faced, because mm-hmm. it was so wet and cold early on in the spring that, it delayed a lot of planting. And, you know, the longer you have to wait to plant, typically the less yield you're not going to yield as well. Like the plants, all the seed needs to go in the ground within sometime in May, as far as corn and soybeans go, May to early June is acceptable. But the longer you wait, that more or less means you're not going to make as much money. And that can be stressful when you have a lot of bills pending and things like that. You know, there's a lot of financial, the financial mm-hmm. model of farming is pretty complex and pretty challenging.
Because I imagine you guys get paid once the crops are done, like there's nothing kind of in that in between time, unless, I mean, I'm wrong, but.
So that's an interesting thought. So what we do after we harvest our grain, the grain gets stored into bins, and they're more or less metal cylinder shaped structures that, will have a fan on there to allow the grain to aerate, but we more or less take care of the grain, and store them throughout the winter, sometimes throughout the next spring and even into that summer. And then the buyers will come pick up the grain periodically within a year, like whenever they need it. So cash flow wise, like we are still like, that's what's interesting about farming is we're paying bills right now that are due right now, but we're still getting paid from last year's crop.
Interesting. That's so definitely like not what I thought it would be.
No, yeah, it's not like a big lump sum of money after harvest. I mean, there's some farmers that will sell directly to an elevator, and that's their business. Like grain elevators will buy grain at harvest and store it for farmers, or they can just buy it straight from the farmer. The farmer's then done, gets its money, and he's done. But I would say most farms will manage their own marketing, and a lot of farms will store their own grain, especially larger farms. Financially, it makes the most sense to store your own grain and kind of control your own destiny as far as the marketing side goes.
So then would you say that during that vulnerable time of the seed's infancy is like the most important period of time for, you know, the future of that crop? Or would you say it's some other part during that cycle?
There's a lot of factors that go into it. And there's a lot, like, and most of them are out of our control. We do the best we can. And that's like all we can do. And that's why there are stretches that we work like ungodly amounts of hours, because we have to get the work done when the timing is right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's like only a few day stretches of getting things done. And that's what you have to do.
What would some of those be?
For example, last spring, we didn't plant our corn until I planted corn on June 6th and June 7th. I'm sorry, June 7th and June 8th. And that's extremely late. That's probably one of the latest times we've ever planted corn. And I planted for 42 straight hours.
Did you sleep at all?
Nope.
Really? I feel like that's what?
I started at noon on a Friday and I finished at 11 p.m. the following day.
You have helpers, right? Like you guys had to have taken shifts or something.
No,
right?
I did not. I did not get out of that tractor.
Oh.
Like,
wow.
But that was
How'd
like
you stay alive? I don't actually understand.
So much water.
Oh my God.
I drank like an ungodly amount of water. I didn't even drink any caffeine or anything to stay awake. Like I just drank a ton of water. But I wasn't the only one.
First, folks, it's water that actually keeps you awake for 48 hours.
Absolutely. You have to stay hydrated. I mean, like that's an unbelievably special circumstance. Like that's very unheard of that anyone would do that. But timing was everything. And we didn't know. We only had a day or two window to get some work done. And I just said, screw it. I'm going all in and went for it and got all the corn. I planted, I think like 940 acres in, 40 hours.
Was it like 40 hours?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was intense. It was stressful. I think there were a lot of points that I like didn't, that the next day, like at like 3 o'clock, you know, I planted all night and then into the next day, it was like 3 o'clock. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I just feel like I'm going to die.
Yeah.
But, I mean that's what it takes. I think to be successful is to be able to overcome any challenge or obstacle, because there's so many different challenges and obstacles that come along the way. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm obviously not going to do, I hope I never have to do that again.
I hope so too.
That was like not healthy, but that's just like how it goes. Like that's farming. Like it can, I don't know, that you're obviously left with a lot of choices, but it's intense. And yeah, we've definitely grown. We've become more successful since I've came back, just because it's taken a lot of management pressure off of my dad. It's been a ride, that's for sure. But it's fun. I mean, I absolutely love it. Like that sounds miserable, but like don't get me wrong, I was loving it. You know, like it was challenging, but I love what I do.
And that's such a fun story too. Like I know that that's not actually the best thing ever, but when you think back on it, you're like, oh my God, like I was psychotic at that time. And then that's why it's a benefit that you're not 59 going on 60, right? Like, you're not the average age of a farmer. You can actually stay up for maybe 40 hours. But before we end and everything like that, what is something that you wish people knew about farming or knew about certified organic farms that obviously the average person doesn't know, aside from almost everything else that you've already mentioned today?
I want people to have more appreciation for like where their food comes from and all the work that goes into it. Those are things that like I think what we should all be thinking about as well, you know, because I think a lot of it just gets people don't think about it, and I think it's great. I don't know, I'm very proud about what we do, and I just want people to know like how things get done and how your food is produced.
Well, so then how about you tell people where they can find you? I know I mentioned your Instagram a bunch of times, but is there any other way that people can be curious about farming and look up more about it? And at least,
oh my gosh, there's like, if you go on YouTube, I mean, you can just like go down a real rabbit hole of like just looking at all things farming. But yeah, YouTube is a great source for people to kind of learn more about like how larger farms operate nowadays. Instagram is huge too. There's so many farmers. Look up the Minnesota Millennial Farmer. That guy is probably the most successful social media farmer I know. That guy is awesome. He speaks at a lot of conferences. He's probably just as successful as a farmer as he is pretty much posting with social media. He's definitely taken it to the next level. So people like that, I mean, like, those are people that I'm like trying to be like, you know, like, we all have goals. Like, obviously you're doing a podcast that's something that's like very, very trending, and like the things that people love. Like, I listen to podcasts all the time now, and like, I think this is fantastic that you're doing this. But yeah, I mean, I have idols too, and like, as far as what I'm doing on social media. So like, yeah, there's a lot of avenues you could go down to find different sorts of people that are doing some pretty cool stuff.
I definitely think that you guys should start some. Thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski, and feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.